On ABC Radio Brisbane, Steve Austin.
As we head towards the 10-year anniversary of the global financial crisis, all that massive public debt, you may recall, has simply been transferred from the banks to the public purse. For the last 9 years, the US Department of Justice has been busily issuing fines to American banks that are so large, it's hard to fathom or imagine. Now, my next guest used to be with the Queensland Investment Corporation for 17 years. He was portfolio manager and head of research at the QIC. These days, Neil College runs a small little hedge fund, of which he's a director of a small little hedge fund. Neil College, welcome into the studio. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Steve.
Take me back to the global financial crisis. Paint the scene for me at that time, if you would, please, Neil.
Well, many of your listeners will have seen the movie The Wolf of Wall Street, which was about a New York stockbroker who stole millions of dollars from his clients. What The Wolf of Wall Street did was really like a petty criminal against what the big US banks did. I mean, this guy stole millions. The big US banks loaned millions, billions, traded billions, lost billions, and were fined billions of dollars. That is, they were at least 1,000 times bigger. For example, the US and European banks have, over the last 8-9 years since the GFC, been fined a total of 428 billion Australian dollars.
What? 428 billion?
Exactly. This is a truly huge number. Let me put it in context for you. The GDP of Australia is about four times that, about $1.5 trillion.
So a quarter of the entire GDP of Australia.
Exactly.
In fines.
In fines. In fines alone. These fines went about 60% to the regulators in the US and Europe and about 40% to the victims. The biggest single source of fines to date, about a quarter of them, was in fact the things that caused the GFC, i.e. mis-selling mortgages to the unfortunate borrowers in the US and Europe.
We saw that in The Big Short, the movie, didn't we?
Exactly.
Well played out there.
Exactly. Mm. The Big Short, Margin Call, some very good movies have been made about what happened in the GFC. And the other big source of fines was when big US banks had sold mortgages to the unfortunate borrowers, and the borrowers turned out not to pay and not to be able to pay in some cases. The big banks were fined because their trail of foreclosure documents was completely inadequate. They simply had not done the paperwork, and yet they were trying to foreclose on their unfortunate borrowers whom they'd sold loans which they'd lied about.
So the Wolf of Wall Street was a minor player, a petty criminal, compared to the major banks?
The Wolf of Wall Street was 1,000th the size of what the major banks did.
So the banks were the big criminals, yet no one really went to jail, Neil College.
Oh, exactly.
No one went to jail.
Almost no one.
Despite the fraud.
Almost no one. There have been nearly 200 cases mounted by the SEC and other agencies in the US. In 81% of these cases, no employees were charged, not one. In the other 19%, there are 47 employees charged, and most of them either pleaded guilty or were convicted after a defence. But 47 people, all of whom were low level. This was not the CEOs, the CFOs, the senior executives or something like that.
You understand the big money world, Neil. How can that be?
Because these cases were mounted by the regulators on the basis of the easiest first. It's best to mount a case if you have documentary evidence, i.e. A paper trail which amounts to a smoking gun. And if you can prove, for example, that when a bank foreclosed on someone, their documents were wrong, then that's a very easy case to mount. You're bound to win it, and you're going to get the bank fined for that. But if you want to prove that a CEO actually was involved in that, then you've got to have a paper trail which leads from the low-level people who actually administered the mortgages all the way up through middle management to the guy at the top. That's hard.
I'm still stunned. So the Department of Justice, though, has been issuing fines for bad financial behaviour, and the total amount so far is $428 billion in fines they've copped.
That's both the US and Europe. It's about 60%. Yeah, it's about 60% in the US and about 40% in Europe, because the European banks had extended their operations to the US and various other places.
Who gets that money?
About 62% actually goes to the regulators, 38% to the victims so far. These cases are still running in many cases.
Are there any significant or notable cases that are still running that you know of?
Well, I mean, the banks committed so many sins that there are lots of cases still running. I talked about mis-selling of mortgages and failing to have the correct foreclosure documents and so forth. The banks have been convicted of money laundering. They have been convicted of money laundering.
These are reputable financial institutions. And they've been convicted of money laundering.
Yes. For example, one of the largest single bank fines was against Hong Kong and Shanghai banks.
HSBC.
HSBC, which is a global bank. And it was about what it had done in Mexico with a whole bunch of new clients who just happened to be drug dealers. And, of course, the US was not pleased with this. The HSBC copped the fine and paid $1.9 billion US dollars for that alone. But the banks have gone on and done many, many other things, such as rigging foreign exchange markets, rigging interest rate markets, helping US citizens avoid tax and so forth.
My guest is Neil College. Neil College is director of the company Arminius Capital, which is a hedge fund sort of based here in Australia and Switzerland. He used to be with the Queensland Investment Corporation. He was portfolio manager and head of research for QIC for many years. This is ABC Radio Brisbane. So the Department of Justice got most of the money. Why didn't the people who got stiffed or lost money in these mortgage things get most of the money?
Well,
the actual victims.
Yes, they did get some money, but for most of them it's fairly hard to mount a case. It costs money to hire a lawyer. There have been class actions in the US, and you have had some money returned, but for most of them, it's too hard. It was too long ago, because getting a case through the courts requires, first of all, money to get it up, and then you've got to pursue it for a couple of years to have it heard and so forth, and then you've got to wait for a judgment. For many of them, because they had been basically made bankrupt by the loss of their home, and some of them had lost their jobs as well, they just couldn't afford to do it.
So the big win.
Yes.
How is it that the banks can handle these sorts of fines? I mean, let's say HSBC, $1.2 billion, I think we should figure, for money laundering for drug dealers out of Mexico.
Yep.
Now, oops, didn't notice that money. Sorry about that. Yes, we'll cop the fine. Yet they cop the fine, then it's not even a blip in their profit, in their balance sheet.
It's a blip, but it's not actually that damaging for them. For example, when I say that over the last 8 years, they paid $428 billion in fines, they make in net profit after tax over $200 billion per year. So this is about 2 years' profit for the whole global banking system. It's painful, but it's not catastrophic.
Should it be catastrophic, Neil?
Yes, it should be. It should be much harsher. And to the credit of the Australian authorities, they have been fairly harsh in their treatment of the Australian banks who failed to supervise their financial planners who lost their clients' money. Essentially, the Australian authorities have encouraged people to go out and sue Macquarie, Commonwealth Bank, Westpac, ANZ, everyone who had lying dud financial planners, and get the banks to repay them for their bad advice.
So Australians are in a slightly better position than US or Europeans?
A very slightly better position. Australian banks have been better regulated than US and European banks. APRA has done a generally good job, and the success of Australian governments have never bought into the free market ideology, which the US government did, that if you leave things to free competition, everything will sort itself out.
What's been the impact on the global financial sector as a result of like $428 billion worth of fines, the whole aftermath?
Well, if we look back to the GFC, we can recall that the share prices of the major banks in Australia halved. They have since recovered and in most cases gone on to higher levels. In the case of the US and Europe, that happened, but the share prices of the banks have not recovered. They have improved from their low levels, but by and large, they are not back to where they were before the GFC, because they're not making the sort of profits they were before the GFC. As we know, most of those profits were based on lies and mis-selling and various forms of fraud.
Right. So what's it done to places like Liechtenstein and Switzerland, which were wonderfully helpful little principalities that were very useful to big financial houses and people that wanted to sit money in places? What's it done to these places?
We've talked about the US, and the US is the largest economy in the world. It's basically a quarter of the world's GDP. So when it has problems with its banks, they're very big banks indeed. But there are a lot of little countries, such as Switzerland, where it had two big banks, UBS and Credit Suisse. At the time of the GFC, the Swiss National Bank discovered that the total assets of these two banks was eight times the Swiss GDP in 2008. Eight times.
Isn't that fantastic?
Well, there was obviously no hope of the government actually managing to support these. So the Swiss National Bank took very sharp action against them, disciplinary action and so forth. But it was a common problem. Ireland, Iceland, Malta, Cyprus, all in the same problems. They had banks which had expanded beyond their borders, taken on huge assets and liabilities elsewhere, and when they lost money, it was catastrophic for the home economy.
My guest is Neil College. Neil College is director of a hedge fund, Arminius Capital, based here in Australia and in Switzerland. This is ABC Radio Brisbane. The US Department of Justice, I think, basically threatened these places, this list of small countries or principalities you named, didn't they? Said, if you don't cooperate, we'll take action against you.
Absolutely, absolutely. For a long time, you may recall, the Swiss banking system was proud of its secrecy, its numbered accounts and so forth. It was very popular with assorted African dictators as a nice place to stash your money and no one would ever find it. Mm-hmm. Over the last decade, the US tax authorities have really come down very hard on the Swiss, and now the Swiss disclose everything. Why? Because the Swiss banks were notorious for helping US residents avoid tax by moving them into numbered accounts, by moving cash around them and so forth. And essentially the US said, well, you, as a small country, Switzerland, will be shut out of the US financial system unless you cooperate, i.e. your banks will not be allowed to operate in the US. They'll be, will, if you don't play ball, we'll deny them access to the legal system, the payment system and so forth. And so, of course, the Swiss play ball.
I'm talking with Neil College. I'll continue on my questioning of Neil in just a moment, but just I have some late breaking news. Labor frontbencher Kate Ellis has just announced she is to quit politics at the next federal election. The ABC has confirmed with the Labor Party that the spokeswoman for early childhood and development won't contest the election. In a letter to constituents, Kate Ellis said that she loved her job but made the decision to step down for her family. She said she'd wait until the next federal election, as she has no intention of causing a by-election. It's unclear whether she'll remain on Labor's front bench federally, but if you've just turned on your wireless or your smartphone, news is that federal Labor frontbencher Kate Ellis has announced she will quit federal politics at the next election. And commercial television in Brisbane is reporting that Queensland police are on scene at an Eagleby home following reports of an armed man making threats. So we'll find out about that if we can. But commercial TV are reporting that on the south side of Brisbane at an Eagleby home, there are reports of an armed man making threats. Police are on scene. We'll find out what details we can. We're talking about the aftermath of the global financial crisis, the massive amount of money, $428 billion on fines that banks have been required to pay. That usually 81% of cases, no one is charged and the CEOs get away with it. The bearer of mixed news is Neil College. Neil College used to be with the Queensland Investment Corporation for 17 years. He was portfolio manager and head of research there. These days he's a director of Arminius Capital, which is a hedge fund. Neil, where's the moral hazard in today's financial system? You know that phrase we heard a lot at the GFC, the moral hazard. There needed to be a cost to these big guys.
Yeah, the level of moral hazard we face now flows directly from deregulation. If your listeners can think back to the 60s or 70s, they'll recall that banks then were much, much more regulated in terms of the interest rates they charged. This was a time, of course, when exchange rate for the Australian dollar against all other currencies was fixed by the Australian government and so forth. So the price of deregulation is that banks can go spectacularly wrong when they do things. This is partly due to the regulatory oversight, and APRA has been better than the US and European regulators in that respect, but partly also to bank culture. As we said earlier, it's about how the low-level employees are supervised by their middle managers and their their most senior executives. For example, recently in the US, one of the largest banks, Wells Fargo, which has more than 250,000 employees, fired 5,000 employees, only 200, but fired 5,000 employees for creating fake accounts without its customers' knowledge. Why were the employees doing this? I mean, the customers here were not actually harmed. Perhaps it cost them on average less than $2 in fees. Mostly they didn't notice it. But the employees had been given by their senior management the target of cross-selling products, and you had to open for every customer another one or two accounts. You had to sell them a notional account. So what the employees did in many cases was just to get them in and get them to sign something and say, look, this doesn't cost anything, we're going to open this for you and so forth, or do it basically without the customer's knowledge. Over 2 million fake accounts were opened. Now, as I said, customers were not harmed by this. It was, of course, grossly illegal, and they shouldn't have been done. But the employees were doing it in order to comply with the directive from senior management to cross-sell products. So they cross-sell products which basically didn't exist.
I remember hearing the Democrat Elizabeth Warren cross-examine the head of Wells Fargo. It was delightfully excruciating in hearing him trying to avoid answering questions about why no one senior had paid the price for that pressure on staff.
Exactly, exactly. The senior people went on to better things within the company. And because it was quite hard to, again, it's the paper trail, the documents. You can see that when a low-level employee signs up someone, his or her name and signature are actually on the documents. You can't trace that back to his manager, his manager's manager, let alone the CEO.
25 past 10, just confirming that police have declared an emergency situation under the Public Safety Preservation Act in the suburb of Eagleby on the south side of Brisbane, just down past Beenleigh off the highway, really, I guess. Initial information suggests that a lone man in a house is making threats and armed with a firearm. The police have got an exclusion zone around Taylor Street, Hurses Road, Tribeca Place, and 200 metres south of Joslin Court in Eagleby. Police negotiators are on scene and speaking with the man. You'll hear more news in ABC News later. In fact, not far away in headlines, I think. Currently, our Economics Committee of Parliament is talking to the big banks. The new six-monthly, turn up at federal parliament and account for yourselves. What do you see here? Before I let you go, are Australian banks being as responsive as they should? You've said the APRA got it right here, much better regulation in Australia, which is good news. But there seems to be still a cultural problem in Australia's banks. How do you see it?
There's a very large cultural problem in Australia's banks. When I say that Australian banks are better than the US, that's not saying very much. Australian banks are far from perfect.
At least they're not money laundering Mexican drug money.
No, that's true. But they have lost fortunes for their financial planning clients, which they certainly didn't voluntarily offer to give them back their money. They had to be forced by ASIC and other regulators. And if your listeners will remember that Australian banks have prior convictions here. Think back 15 years to the National Australia Bank's forex traders and the on-running scandal there. Think back to the early 90s when Westpac and ANZ were basically bust except for government assistance. Even in the GFC, all big Australian banks needed government assistance. They needed access to liquidity at very acceptable prices because their normal sources of finance have been shut down during the GFC. So while Australian banks have been better than US banks, that doesn't mean that they have actually been good.
It's a low bar.
It's a very, very low bar they've set themselves, and the cultural problems are still there.
So what would you do? You've been around money for a while. What would you do to fix it up?
Well, when I said earlier that deregulation is part of the problem, all that means is that when you have deregulation, you allow the banks more freedom. And more freedom includes the freedom to make mistakes, which they have done in a big way.
They've enjoyed their freedom.
Exactly. So you have to exercise control over the banks. You have to check what they're doing, and there's no harm in six-monthly testimony to make sure that they're doing okay. And very much it's a question of naming and shaming. No bank manager actually likes to be named in public as the guy who lost a fortune for this particular group of financial planning clients.
You saw the film The Big Short.
Yes.
Did it leave anything hanging? It was a pretty good movie. Did it leave anything hanging? Any issue unaddressed? I mean, it was a very good way of explaining to someone like me, who doesn't understand financial markets, what happened, what went on, but you were still left with this, my God, how could that happen?
It happens because, first of all, the regulators in the US were not being very tough. Mm. The Federal Reserve and other regulators firmly believed that free markets would solve all the problems, that people acting in their own self-interest would do the right thing. That has turned out to be nonsense. Obviously. What we need to do is to find a balance between some form of deregulation and some form of control.
It's been really entertaining. $428 billion in fines.
And still counting.
And still counting. How much long is it going to go on for?
Probably another 2 years before all the existing cases are settled. And the banks may, as we speak, be running up new crimes for which they'll be fined.
Actually, another question. What happened to all that debt they were holding? Remember, way back in 2008, it was essentially shifted from the banks to the public sector.
Yes.
In the US. All that debt is still sitting there.
Well, it depends on the country you're in. In, for example, Switzerland, the authorities there got very tough with the banks. They put all the debt into basically a publicly owned bad bank, which is there to resolve matters, changed all the management and told the two big banks there to behave themselves. In Ireland, the Irish government actually guaranteed all the banks' debt. It became public debt, and it took them years to work that one out. Iceland, they sent all their big banks bust. Literally, they went bust. They sent the CEOs and senior managers of the big banks to jail. The US, a mix of the two. As I said, no banks' CEOs have been to jail. But essentially the operations of the Federal Reserve were designed to prop up the big banks in order to prop up the financial system. So there are various solutions, but you're right. The debt is still around in various forms. Over time, with economic growth and inflation, that debt gets less important.
Can a nominated CEO you think should have gone to jail?
No, most of them should have gone to jail.
Okay. Neil College, thank you very much for walking me through it. I appreciate it.
A pleasure, Steve.
Neil College, director of Arminius Capital, a hedge fund based here in Australia and Switzerland.
Steve Austin on ABC Radio Brisbane.